Hey, what's up, everybody? This is John of Choking, Minnesota, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu After Dark podcast for October 2nd, 2014. This podcast is brought to you by Fuji Sports at www.fujisports.com. If you need gear, be it for BJJ, MMA, karate, judo, if you just want to look cool like me, Fuji Sports has what you need. They have sponsored athletes such as UFC Women's Champ and Olympic bronze medalist Ronda Rousey, two-time Olympic judo medalist Jimmy Pedro, BJJ legend and coral belt Hoyler Gracie. You know, this is quality gear for athletes who compete at the highest levels of competition, but it's also affordable and available for, you know, your average weekend Joes or just people who just love the sports. So right now, on top of all that, through October 15th of 2014, if you enter coupon code Hoyler, that's R-O-Y-L-E-R, at checkout, you get 15% off your entire order. So go to www.fujisports, that's FUJISPORTS.com, to get everything you need. And I'll have some gear reviews coming soon for their rash guard board shorts and gis. So make sure to stay tuned to chokingminnesota.com for those. After you get your gear, then it's time to train. You train like an animal. Don't be modest. You know, I know you do it. It takes a toll on your body. So the last thing you want before, during, or after training, some additive-filled so-called energy drink rotting out your gut. Kill Cliff Recovery Drink. It's designed not only to boost energy, but also to be easier on your system so you can recover faster in your off time. Check them out. Go to www.killcliff.com or just try it for yourself at your local GNC store. And Driller MMA and Resurrection Fighting Alliance present RFA 19 at Mystic Lake Casino on October 10th, 2014. I keep saying 2014, assuming that I'll be doing this in a year. Hopefully I will, but just in case, that's this year, 2014. They got some of the best fighters from Minnesota and Wisconsin on the card. The show's filling up fast. I hear the fighters around here are selling out. There isn't a lot left out there, but you still got a chance. If for some reason you aren't able to get tickets, it will be broadcast on Access TV, but nothing compares to the live experience, and this is going to be the first fights they're having in the amphitheater in which they normally hold concerts. Should be a huge haul. Great time. So, if you can, get your tickets. Highly recommend it. Always a blast. Otherwise, you can go and get your tickets from your favorite fighter or at cagetix.com/RFA. That's CAGETIX.com. Now, enough of that. Play the music. Who the hell am I yelling at? I'm the only one sitting here doing this. Jesus.
With 3 pints inside and another held tight, I walked out of the tavern and into the night. Stumbled woozy, sick, through the forest thick, when I thought I saw dark roots real quick. And I tell you, man, for I drink too much, believe me now when I say it's such. That night I saw a horrid grin on the trees of the forest as they moved in, and they wrapped stick fingers around me.
Okay, before I get into this week's interview with renowned grappler, fighter, and trainer Eric Paulson, I want to connect you all again. I haven't done a solo podcast in a while. I'm starting to feel a distance grow between us, and I don't like it. I just want to bond for a couple of minutes. You know, don't make it weird. It's been a week. It's just been a week. This marks the third time I've been called to jury duty. My first time actually serving on a jury. Let me set the stage for you. Back in February, imagine southern Minneapolis. You know, it's middle of winter, starting to get into late winter. Snow on the ground. Early morning, 5, 6 o'clock. People starting to stir, get up, make coffee, get ready for their day. Commute. Kiss their spouses, their children, good morning. And around that time, a guy and his pregnant girlfriend show up at a house to go cook some crack, and the guy gets shot in the dick. And Then, flash forward 7 months, and I'm sitting on a jury trying to determine if the defendant did in fact shoot the victim in the dick. I pause for beer. Hold on. So that pretty much sums up the last 3-4 days of my life. Sitting on that jury. If you want some details, I don't want to talk about it. Or if you buy me a beer, I'll talk about it all you want. Let's just say it's been an interesting week with me discovering more about the judicial system. And another example, I think, of why I don't write legal dramas and I stick to nice, cozy little fictions and thrillers. It was, I mean, nothing against it. It was an interesting process. Well, besides the fact that they pay you $10 a day in downtown Minneapolis parking, teeters around 11, but that's a completely different argument. So, at one point, after listening to the girlfriend of said crack cook, I think that's the title you give to someone who makes crack, a crack cook, crack de cuisine, crack chef. After listening to her testimony while her 2-month-old baby was being held by Child Protective Services in the gallery, and me being infinitely depressed realizing that my own daughter is that same age, just made me a little bit sad, so I figured I'd treat myself. I went to this restaurant in downtown Minneapolis called the Zen Box on recommendation. Went for lunch, and as many of you know, I don't have money. The stuff that I have that's even for this broadcast has been largely donated or found at drastically reduced prices. So the idea of spending $13 for lunch was, it was fucking crazy. I don't know, it amazes me there are people out there that afford $13 for lunch, and you're Rockefellers to me, frankly, and I salute you, and I'll drink my, well, tonight it's Grain Belt. Living it up a little bit. I thought I earned it this week. But my hat to you if you can afford $13 lunches. Anyway, my wife doesn't know about it, that I spent $13 on a lunch, and it won't be discussed. She won't listen to this podcast, and I expect you all to not talk about it. I guess it'd be pretty weird if I found out that my wife had talked to one of you about it. I don't know how those worlds would have collided, but regardless, it had been a shitty week, depressing testimony. It was cold, rainy, and I destroyed that goddamn bowl of ramen, pork, soft shell or soft boiled eggs and other goodies in about 6 minutes. It was huge. It's like a half gallon or so. I didn't realize how fast I'd eaten it until I felt a cramping in my upper back from hunching over the bowl like some kind of angry, ravenous troll unwilling to share a goat or whatever the hell trolls eat. It was fucking amazing. Recharged me for another 4 hours of really sad witness testimony that kind of puts my own life into perspective, and I suppose just not having much money socioeconomically compared to a lot of people I know isn't so bad compared to a lot of people out there. So now I'm here. Let's move on with things. I know you saw Eric Paulson on the podcast. You want to hear from Eric Paulson, so here's my absolutely most uplifting and inspiring interview, seriously, with BJJ, Judo, and Taekwondo black belt Eric Paulson. Oh, and there's ghosts. Yeah, you heard me. No, seriously, there's ghosts. All right, Eric Paulson, black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Judo, Taekwondo. First American to win the Shudo, I believe it was middle heavyweight championship, or whatever information you can just get for yourselves on Wikipedia. Instead, let's just dive into it with Sensei Eric Paulson. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I know that your schedule is crazy busy because you just said you got home from, was it Germany?
I was in Germany and England, and I just got back from a 7-seminar tour.
About how much time do you spend out of the country?
I try to stay at home as much as I can, but I have to go to Europe probably about 3 times a year.
Just keeping up on your affiliations, making sure everything's up to standard?
Yeah, I've got a lot of guys in Italy, Germany, England, Scotland. I had some guys in Sweden for a while.
Jeez, put on a few frequent flyer miles.
Yeah, a lot of, actually. I travel every weekend. I do seminars every single weekend all throughout the United States.
Yeah, you're coming to Duluth, Minnesota soon, aren't you?
Yes, I have a seminar for Drake Ritchie. I go up there. Some people find out about it. I have a good affiliation with Rick Fay and Drake Ritchie with the Minnesota Collie Group, but they open it up to everybody, and then I get other jiu-jitsu groups and catch wrestling groups to come in and train. And it's good because we get some of the MMA fighters, but we get a lot of the grapplers. And I think the future to reach everybody is through grappling. You know, a lot of people don't want to fight, but they want to grapple.
Yeah, that actually speaks to me personally. I know the last time you came through Minneapolis when you were at Rick Fay's MKG in Minneapolis, one of the grapplers there had asked if I was going to go, and with me with my kids, it's always a hit or miss if I'm going to be able to make seminars. But part of me is, like, I boxed and kickboxed when I started, and, you know, I know you've got your combat submission wrestling, but I had no idea how much of it was going to be striking. And then you came through and they're like, yeah, he didn't do any striking at all. It was all grappling. And I was like, damn it. I wish I'd have been there for that.
Well, I do a portion on striking. And the reason is because I think that in a real situation, a lot of people actually wish that they had some type of striking. So I go at a fast pace. I teach a really fast paced workshop, very explanatory. I explain things very much, and I go through things very fast. And I have a lot of drills. I have a lot of interaction between people, and work on a lot of techniques and concepts. And then we go into the clinching and then the ground. And then on the ground, we work a lot of the striking, and then it depends. Like, some places I go to, they only want ground, so we just work ground. And the ground guys want only leg locks. Some guys want only chokes and neck cranks, and then others want an overview of everything.
And do you generally go in with just kind of open mind, see what you want, or is it lend itself a lot towards self-defense or professional fighting? Anything in particular?
If it was professional fighting, I would only have like 10 people.
Sure.
Or five people. It's for everything. And most of the guys that are professional most of the guys that are professional fighters, they don't even take seminars. So what am I going to train a bunch of guys? Like, I'll train amateurs that are up and coming. Most of the pros don't even take seminars anymore. They just figure they got it, and they just watch videos and train, and that's fine. So what I try to do is, so a lot of training methods and ideology for the grappling, for the mixture between the striking to the takedown to the ground, and then on the ground, a lot of the catch wrestling, a lot of the jiu-jitsu. It's just mixed up.
At your school, because I know you've trained with Josh, you've trained Josh Barnett in the past, and you trained Brock Lesnar, and I think with Hector Lombard at one point, because I remember hearing stories about
Hector Lombard, Vinny Magalhães. I had Ken Shamrock before all those guys, and then I had Guy Metzger and Vernon Tiger White and a lot of those guys.
So you had all them in the past. So do you still actively, I don't want to say seek out professional fighters, but is that something at your schools that you have? Like, is it for professional fighters, or is it just kind of one of those things, if a guy wants to fight and he wants to go into your gym, it's available, or do you just kind of stay away from that?
It's totally opposite. I actually like to train normal people and change normal people's lives, because I think you can make a greater impact on society training normal people how to get good martial arts and how to change their life, how to think differently. And then some guys that come in and they think, or they think that they want to be a fighter, or they say they're a fighter. I say, okay, well, we have a team, and here's the times that we train. I don't allow my professional fighters to train with my normal people. I keep the animals away from the normal people.
Sure.
And people say, well, how come we can't train at night? And I say, well, because the guys at night actually pay for their training, and most of you guys in the day don't pay for your training, or I don't want anyone getting hurt that have 9-to-5 jobs. And martial arts, mixed martial arts, to this day, should be kept separate. You shouldn't have to worry about a guy coming in that's going to pick you up and slam you on your neck and fracture your vertebrae because of the fact that he was a professional fighter and he would not allow anyone to ever snap a triangle on him.
Did you ever have issues with that in the past with your professional fighters?
Yes. I made a mistake in the beginning years when I had my third school. I allowed a lot of the fighters. I said, "Hey, you guys are invited to come to the night class," and then they used the night class guys as fresh meat. And then I'm sitting there with a group of about, started from 60 going down to 40, and then it wasn't happening. So when I changed it, the numbers went up, and I've got a lot of much better people that have 9-to-5 jobs that are not out of work, that are working regularly, and it's a form, it's an alternative form of working out, instead of going to the gym, they're coming in and they're getting their hour of rowing or, grappling or kickboxing in or boxing or wrestling, and they don't have to actually worry about someone coming in that's going to try to take advantage and try to knock them out or knock their teeth out.
That definitely sounds like something that you're saying from experience and not secondhand. So then I'm curious, how do you view the current state of mixed martial arts, considering that you grew up in the Shudo days and you've seen the progression from fighters and everything else? Do you think that MMA is on the right track, like John Jones and Daniel Cormier getting in their fight? Do you think that MMA generally is on the right track as far as getting public acceptance, or do you think it was initially something people were curious about, and now it's starting to wane? Does there need to be any sorts of changes to be more socially acceptable, or even maybe more honorable as far as the fighters are concerned?
Well, I think they had their heyday. I think it's still big, but you're looking at a lot of the fighters that they were paid a lot for their sponsorships, and I think that at the highest end right now, the sponsorships are disappearing. The money's not as great as it used to be for some of these guys. And a lot of guys are looking at the grappling aspect of things, because you can do grappling the rest of your life. Is there money in grappling? No, there's not money. Is there recognition? Yeah, it's more of a sport. So what are you training people for? Are you training for a sport? The biggest thing is, today with the changing of ages and the way things are going, I think self-defense is a big part of things. Physical fitness is a huge part. CrossFit plays a huge part in everything. I got a lot of guys that have, they train with me and they train at CrossFit, or they train with me and they own a CrossFit. And I believe that the physical fitness part is important, but the self-defense part is just as important. And the ability to grapple and handle yourself is more important than anything. And a lot of people with fighters, to the extreme case, there becomes a lot of egos and guys looking out for themselves and not for everyone else. So the team camaraderie is the most important thing. And with the team camaraderie, I believe that the nighttime training is more applicable for a school than actually just training a bunch of guys who want to beat the crap out of each other.
And you mentioned self-defense, and I know that seems to be a fairly predominant issue in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu now. People arguing the older styles, I suppose, of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu versus the more the sport aspects of it now, with the Barambolo and the double guard pulls and the half guard pulls.
You're talking about the Gracie combatives. The Gracie combatives, like for me, when I see all that, I was training with the Gracies and the Machados and the Ages, where the Grace Combatives were a big part of every day's practice. We did in the Gracie garage, we were taught all the self-defense stuff. And I believe that the art, any art, needs to teach stuff as far as self-defense versus striking, versus a grappler, and versus any weapon, including a knife, possibly a gun, staff, anything, a pull cue. So I think the weapons plays a big part in that too. So that's why I like the Collie, because it teaches all that. I like the C-Lot. And I also like hand-to-hand. The best fighting hand-to-hand as far as for striking is boxing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Boxing. And then it's controversial whether kickboxing is savate or Muay Thai or karate point fighting.
Sure, yeah, but they all have their strong points. I mean, Salat, yeah, the point of the toe of the shoe. Yeah, I guess it just kind of depends on the person. Then I'm curious, because you were a person that grew up with the Gracie Combatives, why do you think it started to change? Why did it start to drift away from so many schools teaching it from a self-defense angle to more of the sport angle?
Because of the fact that people figured they didn't need it, and then also a lot of people just want to compete in tournaments. And so schools got popular by having their guys compete in tournaments. So it was actually a team, becomes a team effort. And if your team doesn't have a ton of competitors competing and winning, then you don't rate on the roster. The Combatives program is a personal situation, a personal issue. And, you know, there's no team effort in self-defense in the street. Saving someone's life, I believe, weighs way, way, way more than training someone how to win a tournament. And I have police officers, I have military, and I've had tons of different people that have actually used the self-defense to save their lives during rape situations and you name it. So I believe that the self-defense is a huge part of that. But you also have to have the sports side of it, because you can't just train self-defense all the time, because once you establish a headbutt on a heavy bag, what are you going to do, walk in and headbutt the heavy bag every day? Or grab the bag and do sandwich elbows on the heavy bag? You have to go, okay, now what can I do? What can I do for my body, for the sport aspect of things, for my athleticism? I have to learn how to roll. I have to learn how to spar. I have to learn how to punch. So the heavy bag training is important. The partner training is important. Learn how to shadow box, jump rope, run, nutrition, sparring, partner drills, timing drills. That's all part of the whole thing.
And then on the sports side of it, there's the example, like when Josh Barnett, was it 2009 when he won the Nogi Worlds, or 2007?
It was right after the Fedor. It was the Affliction Fedor fall through.
Okay,
so when that fight got canceled, I told Josh, I said, you're in the shape of your life. The best thing that you could do right now, you train for a fight, didn't happen. The best thing you do is go compete in all the grappling tournaments.
He competed a lot, too. I saw videos all over the place, even just tiny tournaments. All of a sudden, it was like, and Josh Barnett at some Colorado tournament or something.
Yeah, I told him that he needed to compete. I said, if you're in this shape and you're this angry, you need to go all out and go all over. And if you believe that catch wrestling is so powerful, it's just funny because a lot of these guys that do catch wrestling, they also train in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You have to, and the thing is if you don't, how do you, first of all, your opponents are all really good or great jiu-jitsu guys. And to say, it's all this or that. No, it's not all this or that. It's combined, and that's what it is. And the thing is your style, are you a top game player or a bottom game player? And that's it. And the catch wrestling is a little different. It teaches you to attack and ride and attack and wrestle more, which jiu-jitsu makes you move and transition, and it's more of a smooth flow. And you know, the whole thing, it's great to have opposition, because if everyone did jiu-jitsu, then it'd be boring, because you watch two guys just doing something and they're trying to all do the same moves, as opposed to a guy that's trying to do a different style and coming in with a wrestler's mentality. And to see jiu-jitsu versus wrestling or whatever it is, that's good watch.
Which Josh Barnett showed pretty well at the last Meta Morris event.
Yeah, with him and Dan, he played it cool, because he knew if his feet got out from under his butt with wrestling shoes on, that Dan would easily get his leg, and then with the heel and with the shoe, it'd be easy to submit his feet. So he kept his feet under his butt really good. He controlled him. He didn't give him anything. He didn't allow himself to get up in the air where his legs or his feet were available. If he did get up a little bit, his feet were always under his butt. And that's kind of the secret, you know, keeping those feet under the butt makes it a lot harder, especially if you're on top, to catch a leg lock. Unless you're off balance, you fall, and then your leg comes out at a 90-degree angle, and then there's a leg lock.
Do you think that given Dean Lister's game, especially using like half guard to set up leg locks and things like that, that was a better matchup for Josh Barnett than, I guess I don't even have another grappler that would necessarily be better, maybe someone who's more active as a top game working to sweep him more?
Well, Josh is a top game player. Josh is a top game player, and not always top game. You know, he starts on his back, but good getting on top. So the control factor was a big thing, a big factor in winning this fight, because he wanted to ride, control, pressure, put his hips into him. You know, and Dean Lister is about my height and about my size, so Josh knows how to roll with me. He knows how to stay on top and keep his hips on me and not let me out and let me get on top. And so he used that against him. And, you know, it's weird, but the 3 or 4 inch advantage plays a huge difference with a bigger guy versus a smaller guy. And Josh is bottom heavy. He's not a top heavy guy. He's a bottom heavy guy. So to get Josh's legs, how do you get him off his... How do you get him off his ass when he's sitting on his feet?
Well,
he's got strong hips, big legs. You know, he's got good base, good core, super core. You know, there it is.
I don't know how versed you are, at least in the current competition BJJ game. Would there be any particular grappler you think would be a really good matchup to go against him again in another Meta Morris style event?
Well, they're talking about Bruschetta.
Sure.
Bruschetta was actually supposed to be in the crowd and supposed to stand up and challenge Josh, but I think when they saw, I don't know if he was there, so I can't say, but if he was in the crowd and he didn't stand up and challenge Josh, he probably was surprised, thinking, oh shit, how do you beat that? I mean, shut. It was a complete, the difference in that grappling right there was like night and day. Josh played a perfect game. For anyone to say anything about anything, it's like it was a perfect way to win the match. And he played the rules 100% perfect.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. And then in that last 15-second countdown to the 11-second mark, when he submitted him with the head and arm choke, which I said to back, I said, you're going to beat him with either the fat man or you're going to beat him with the mother's milk. Just because I'm not good at the mother's milk, going to go, then you go into the fat man choke, is where you're going to be with Chiesa. And it's easy to get.
I just wait
till he's tired, and then sit out and hold him, and that's it. You can't finish, you can't move, you take the air out of the lungs, and that's it.
So is it kind of a diaphragm crush?
It's a diaphragm crush. It's not a neck crank. People go, oh, it's a neck crank. No, it's not.
Yeah, it's too far back for a neck crank.
All you do is you lift their head and their arm together,
sure.
And you put all your weight on your back, on their chest.
Gotcha.
And you just stay there. And when they're breathing heavy, they can't get a deep breath, and they get a shallower breath, the harder you hold their head, and then boom, they tap. It's so you can't get a breath.
Yeah, and with the head and arm control, he wouldn't be able to get his legs to the side to try and sweep them. Yeah, that
everyone tries to tell me, oh, well, that was, and I go, you know what? No, I used that. I've used that. I got injured. I tore my, I had osteopuris. I tore all my, I tore my hip flexor and my psoas off the top of my pubic bone, and I could not open my guard. I couldn't play guard 3 years. So I'd used Batman choke on guys for 3 straight years, and I was catching. So I created this whole series of ways to catch the Fat Man choke on everybody. And I was using it, and Josh used to come and he goes, oh, come on, do something else. And I go, I don't have to. I don't have to use anything. This is all I needed to use. And I'm catching on everybody.
Well, yeah, it's telling Hodger Gracie, don't do a cross-collar choke for mount. Why not? If I can get you.
Why not? Well, especially when you're good at it and when you know it.
Yeah, learn how to defend. Well, plus, if I figured out some way to actually tap out Josh Barnett, I think I'd probably just do that over and over again.
You'll catch him one time, and that's it on Josh. You'll never, you catch Josh once, you will never catch him again. He'll figure it out. He will sleep on it. He will brew over it. And the next time you get on the mat, he will do all he can to make sure you'll never get that again, and he will be mad at you. And that's Josh Barnett.
Yeah, I've heard a bunch of interviews with him. He definitely sounds like one of the more cerebral guys that I've ever heard in MMA or grappling, for that matter.
Josh has a good sense of humor, but he's very smart. And he knows the way things are or should be. So when he does stuff, he's pretty meticulous. He's got pretty much a game plan for everything.
And I've heard he trains really, really hard. And physical, that sometimes sparring sessions with him go a little bit long.
Well, we don't, you know, the pressure test is the biggest factor and strong point in the fight camp. So a lot of times when we actually do the training for the fights, he's got fresh guys every 2.5 minutes on a 5-minute round, or every 2 minutes, we give him a 6-minute round instead of 5 minutes and a three times that. So that's why we've done it from day one, and it's always, you know, the Shark Tank used to do it. Ken Shamrock's gym used to do it. We used to do it in Shudo. And then it's just, I think it's Japanese style mentality. It's like you get a guy in the ring, you put him in, you get a fresh guy every, depends on what your rounds are. If it's 3-minute round, you get a fresh guy every minute. 5-minute rounds, you get a fresh guy every minute and a half.
Yeah, I love Shark Tank style grappling. Actually, at my gym, we do that on people's birthdays as a way to say I love you. So if we got 15 guys
or,
on the
or
mat,
if they win a belt, or if they win a championship, you go, guess what? We love you. And then you all line up and you beat them up.
Absolutely. Congratulations. Go back to training.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a medal. Do it again. You know, a few years back, I know I keep saying I'm curious, and I am curious because there's a lot of stuff about you that, I mean, especially considering how long you've been training in martial arts and all the martial arts that you sought out. But something I saw years back was a trailer for a reality show about you. What happened to that? Why isn't that on TV?
Well, it never happened. When it came to fruition was, I had a couple of them. Which one did you see? The Pugilist?
Yeah, it was The Pugilist, I think. It was one where you were doing an interview and slid out of your chair mid-interview.
Oh, yeah, that was The Pugilist.
Yeah.
The Pugilist never happened because we couldn't get it picked up. They decided they wanted Ghost Hunters and all these other shows.
And that was The Ultimate Fighter, wasn't it? Or was that after?
It was in the process of.
Okay.
And it just fell through. I had a guy pitch it. And then it turned into a thing called Ghost Fighter. And it was about healing and about going into houses with these fighters and having these guys get the shit kicked out of them from these ghosts. And I laughed too, and I said, you know, I don't think but that's what they were asking for.
Okay.
They wanted these tough guys to walk into these like haunted prisons and go, holy shit, get scared. And I go, you know, you're just making fun of people, and that's not cool. I said, I'll do a show on healing, So I had a show on healing too, and it fell through. I interviewed all these people that did all this work on healing, and you know, I just went, forget it, I'm done.
Sadly, I think there would have been a market for ghost fighters, as sad as that says about television these days.
Oh, yeah. Well, we shot a bunch of stuff, but it got to the point where half the places we went, we got stuff. We got really good stuff. I mean, we actually got real ghost and metaphysical and supernatural stuff. But then in the end, he's like, you know, this isn't so dynamic. It's very subtle. And I go, well, that's what it is. It's subtle. If the camera picks it up, that's great. But most of the time, it's subtle. They go, well, yeah, we want to use some air rams and some disappearing ink. And we want to use some sulfuric smoke, some smoke bombs. And we also want to use some electronic devices to turn the flashlights on and off. And they go, I'm not into that. Are you kidding me? I'm not into magic. Something's real, for real, and you get it. That's perfect. But I'm not... Go to Penn and Teller.
So you actually had a paranormal experience shooting the stuff?
Well, I've had tons of it.
Oh, really?
That's why they came to me about it, because a long time ago, I used to work in a chapel in Los Angeles, and a friend of mine got sick, and she was attacked by tons of demons, and I spent 2 years at this place, where people from all over the world were coming in to get exercise because they were being attacked. I guess it goes infestation, oppression, possession. So there's three things: infestation, oppression, possession. And these people were all possessed, and they were at this chapel in Los Angeles. And, I saw a ton of stuff. But it also helped me with my faith, because it reconfirmed everything that I thought or didn't believe. It reconfirmed everything. So when people say, oh, that's bullshit, you know what? I'll tell you what, it is not bullshit. It's all real. And God does exist, so does the devil. And it happens day by day in small amounts or huge amounts. And some people see things and have things happen, and some people don't. Well, and, you know, and I had a ton of stuff like that happen, and that's why my faith is as strong as it is. Because of, I sat and argued with people. I said, if you sat face-to-face with the devil and he lied to you and said it didn't exist, but you sat and watched it regularly, you'd say, oh, it's bullshit.
Well, I never really know where my interviews are going to go to. I didn't expect him to take this turn, but this is fascinating the hell out of me right now.
That's a lot of people. That's why I actually took a different step and said, oh, so you know about that? And they go, well, don't most people know about that stuff? And they go, no. And then, as a kid, I've always believed in God, but I never knew that all that stuff could actually happen.
And
to witness it and to see it and to see manifestation and stuff like that. I mean, this would be a whole new episode because I've talked about tons of stuff.
So I've never had any paranormal experiences, at least as far as I know. Maybe, like you said, they're subtle and it's just not something that I noticed. But that stuff always fascinated me. Like, I always loved watching that stuff on the History Channel, Eastern State Penitentiary and... like the old asylums and things like that, always fascinating. Creeped the hell out of me. I'd probably never go into any of them. But can you talk about any of the places you went to for the show that you had these experiences?
Well, I travel all over the world, so I always get to experience stuff. I know a lot of the stuff in the... It's weird because Japan felt pretty clear to me most of the time. And then one time in Japan, we were taking pictures out in the street of people. They're surprise pictures. And I went back to my hotel room and I didn't feel right in my room, and then my shoe flew across the room and I was like, yeah, whatever. And then all of a sudden my bed started like bouncing off the ground. It was like, boom, 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 boom. I was like, yeah, okay, we got maybe an earthquake. And then And then my bed was shaking, and then I smelled some weird stuff, and I was like, and then one of the guys from Holland said, oh, you brought someone back with you into your room. He goes, what were you doing? And we were taking pictures in the street. He goes, yeah, you don't want to do that. So, you know, Japan's usually pretty clear. Thailand is definitely not clear because it's a Buddhist country. And there's a lot of different gods there. That's why there's a lot of different gods in Thailand. And a lot of people they don't believe Christianity. They believe in Buddha and treating people right, which is great. But also false deities. A lot of times there's stuff that happens there with that stuff. So with India, I was in Sri Lanka working on a movie. We had stuff all the time happening in our room. Stuff would always move. But a lot of times I see stuff, and I was like, whatever, you know, I'm tired, I don't want to look. But I could always see energy in the room. I could always see things moving. I was like, yeah, okay, I'm just tired, you know, it's air. And it happens all the time, all around. Some people aren't aware of it. They're just aware of their own presence and their own being, and they're not aware of everything around them. And I for some reason, have an awareness of things that are all... I just see things regularly move. Regardless if you're sitting there watching TV and your curtains start moving, you're like, well, why did my curtains start moving? It's not paranoia. I just see things out of the corners of my eyes and also out of peripheral vision.
See, I don't think there's anyone who would argue that I'm definitely the person who is only able to notice himself. But now you're going to freak the hell out of me tonight. Now my dog is going to get up and just start staring at the wall. Or my son's going to start babbling and I'm going to start thinking, talking to a ghost.
Fear is a work of the devil. So hope, belief, and love is of God. Fear is and disbelief and all this stuff, that's work of the devil. And the thing, more than anything, is like, just the most important thing is doing what you're supposed to do here on Earth. You've been sent here for a reason, so do what you're supposed to do. Don't be bothered by all these little other things that are all around you. If you focus on what you're supposed to really do, and live in a state of love, live in a state of happiness, live in a state of intrigue, everything else will take a back seat, and that's what's important. I believe that's what's important.
I think that's as good of a lesson as anyone needs to take away from anything at that point. Like, yeah, just be a good person. Like, take care of your family, your friends. Don't be a bad person. Like, I don't think it needs to be much more complicated than that.
Yeah, I think that's important. You know, some people are religious, some aren't. I don't preach religion on people, but those who want to hear or want to listen, then I will say some words. But what I did find is what I dealt with the dark stuff and the light stuff. The light always prevails no matter what. So no matter what it is, if you're dealing with dark things, if you believe in light, light prevails over darkness no matter what. If you are in a room that is dark and you open a window and it's light outside, light comes into the room and lights the room. If you are in a light room and it's dark outside and you open the window, you get a light beam that goes right through the dark. It beams through the dark. So lightness, no matter what, where you're at, if you try to be a beam of light or the light in the storm, that's the most important thing, because you want to be of light. The highest energy, the highest vibrating energy on Earth is like a purple hue, is like the top of the rainbow. And being of light, if you could be of light, that's very important for everybody.
I'm going to remember that if I ever go to Thailand or Japan, because I heard there's scary, freaky stuff over there, but now I got to worry about ghosts if I take pictures on the street.
Never, Don't ever go anywhere and worry about anything. Worry, again, worry is despair, and worry is doubt.
If I can ever afford to go to Japan, I'm not worrying about anything, because that sounds like it'd be awesome.
Japan's fun. It's a good time.
I heard it's expensive, but I heard it's a fun. I heard it's fun.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be if you do it the right way. And there, people are pretty hospitable once you go in there. It's always good to know a little bit of the language, no matter where you go. And also to love the culture and to go places. And, you know, the common thread between people is talking. A lot of people just don't talk. They go, oh, Japanese tourists, ha ha. Oh, they're taking pictures. It's like, why don't you talk to them? No matter where you go, you know, like for me, it's like you laugh at Japanese tourists, but then when you're an American tourist in Japan, you're going to do the same thing. You don't sit and laugh. You're going to go, oh, that's cool. People that respect our culture, people that respect all of our images and our nature and sights to see. That's important.
Yeah.
So the big, that's important for everybody. You never live in fear. Ever live in fear. There's no reason to live in fear. Never be fearful.
That sounds about like my answer when someone says, why do you podcast? One, because I get to talk to people. How many other times would I get to talk to Paul?
You get to learn.
Well, yeah. You know, I get to hear someone else's point of view. I love talking about grappling and jujitsu, and I love hearing other people's points of view, but I'm just a kid who doesn't have any, well, kid, I'm a little older than a kid at this point. But living in Minnesota, I don't have money. I'm 33. So I've been doing grappling and, well, I, you know, started boxing 12 years ago, grappling for the last 8. So I've got a decent grasp on what I'm doing, but unfortunately, unlike a lot of people, I don't get a chance to travel. I don't have the money. I work a full-time job, but I can podcast and I can interview people and personalities from at least around the United States so far.
Yeah, from all over. And the thing is, I've been in Japan 42 times.
Oh,
travel all over the world.
It sounds like a blast.
Yeah, I get to see a lot of good things. And most of the time, I get to see the good in everybody. I'm very fortunate I don't get to see too many bad. But, you know, when somebody's sick or somebody's in turmoil, I like to help people as much as I possibly can. Or if somebody dies, I always get their name to pray for them. I always pray for people who are sick. I always ask for assistance for those who are forlorn or need assistance or help. Or, you know, I think that's important because I don't think enough humans help enough humans out. And you don't have to be a goodwill ambassador to at least say a good word for somebody or direct somebody in their way. And I think so many times we're led or appointed by God to help people, right? I think a lot of people just sometimes just blow it off. Yeah, it's not my deal. I don't want to get involved. Like, but you are involved. You're a human being. And you're dealing with another human being who's in a bad spot. Why can't you help? Why can't you do something? Just something, one thing to help somebody. Want to try to help somebody every single day, as much as you possibly can. How can you help somebody? What can you do to change the world? What can you do to help somebody that needs help? And there's tons of people all around you all the time that need help. What could you do to help them? Even if it's a good word, if it's putting your hand on their shoulder. You know, I walk through the airport and I'll see somebody that's crippled and having a hard time walking through, and I'll put my hand on their shoulder silently. We'll say a prayer for them. And then I walk away and I go, oh, that was weird. The guy just put his hand on me. I try to say something good or something, you know, and all prayer is it's a vibration. Vibration, it's like you pray over your food, you're changing the vibration of your food. If you say a prayer for someone, you change the vibration to them, the energy that you put to them for them. So that's all it is, regardless if it's a good thought. If you say, I hope this person gets well. Say it 5 times, put your hand on, say that, whatever it is. It helps because just a thought, an inspiration, you know, the most important thing that we have on earth unfortunately, in time of turmoil, I was like, when 9/11 happened, everyone was like, oh my God, the world's going to end. The earth is about to crumble. We have all these terrorist attacks. And then everyone's calling everyone, are you okay? I love you. I miss you. I love you. I love you. Well, why did it take 9/11? Why did it take 9/11 for everyone to figure it out that the most important thing to help heal, or the most important thing, is love? Now, if you call one of your old buddies you hadn't talked to for a long time and go, hey, I miss you. I love you, man. That would mean a lot. Just those words mean a lot.
They would assume I was drunk, but you're right.
Yeah,
that's a connection that you don't, that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably a deeper connection to why teaching as you do, gearing it towards self-defense. It is helping people. It's giving them life lessons to make them feel more confident to protect themselves and their families.
You also, you look at, I teach martial arts out of love. Love for myself, love for humanity, love for one another, for protection. I want to be in shape. I want to look good. I love them. I love me. So that's what Guru and Asano said. He said, teach out of love. Teach out of your heart. So I teach a meditation that is called the Merkaba meditation. And one thing that I found with this meditation that changed my life is the fact that it opens your heart. And it's 17 or 18 breaths, depending upon where you are. 17 or 18 breaths. It's called the Flower of Life, a Merkaba meditation. It was created by a man named John Vala Melchizedek. And this meditation opens your heart chakra and makes you actually want to listen to people and makes you love everything around you. So I started doing this meditation. I never did meditation because I thought it was a waste of time. Like, yeah, I don't have the time to sit around. I'll do Tai Chi when I'm older. But then the Merkaba meditation actually taught me, it opened my heart chakra and taught me how to pay attention to everything and then actually love things. And so it also taught me to go out in the wilderness, put my feet in the grass, touch the trees sometimes. You know, not that I don't want to go back to the gym and kick someone's ass. That has, you know, a part of everything. But I think balance as you get older is really important. Because can you imagine if all you want to do is go in the gym and kick someone's ass all the time? You'd have a pretty sad life. You need to get outside sometimes and put your feet in the grass. That's grounding is what brings you back into earth and makes you a human being.
Speaking of Guru Dan and Asano, I think he's going to be at the Minnesota Kali Group in Minneapolis soon. I think I just saw someone post. Would you mind, speaking of him, would you mind telling people a little bit more about him and if they have a chance to see one of his seminars or take one of his classes?
Guru Dan and Asano, as I was a kid in Minnesota, I grew up in Coon Rapids. As I grew up, I always read about Bruce Lee and got Bruce Lee's fighting methods, and I read the books, and I saw that Dan and Asano was teaching at Anaheim, California, and had a Bruce Lee museum. I said, I will go out and train and learn from Dan and Asano. And that was my quest. I wanted to move to California, because I heard that if you went to junior college and you're a resident, you get free college for 2 years. And then I went out there for modeling, acting, martial arts, and movies. And so I kind of got out of everything and ended up fighting, but I did everything I asked. Everything I said I was going to do, everything I asked to do, I ended up doing it. So, and Dan and Asano, I ended up at his school and ended up training with Guru Dan and Asano for years. And he's a teacher's teacher's teacher. He's not just, when I met him, he's a teacher's teacher. Now he's a teacher's teacher's teacher. He really is. I mean, he's got more skill and knowledge than anyone has any idea about.
Probably forgot more than I'll ever know.
Looks at all these people. I look at all these people. so many great guys have come under your dad. So the biggest thing is you look at, one of the biggest things you look at is if somebody's a good teacher, if somebody's really good, look at the products that they put out. He has so many guys that are in the movies. He has so many guys that are fighters. He has so many guys that will teach, that do seminars in every single art all over the world. Combatively, he does every single art. He has 30 black belts. And he's the humblest man in the world. If anything you could learn from Dan Insano, who's 78 years old, who teaches seminars to this day all over the world and is full of energy and vigor, listen to his humility, his ability just to be such a humble man and so knowledgeable in everything. It's crazy.
So having trained all over in many, many martial art, I mean, Taekwondo, Judo, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and Salat, and Muay Thai, and catch wrestling, and probably Sambo, I think. And I know you.
I went to train most of those, unless I went to the Inosano Academy. He introduced me to all those arts.
And you ended up getting your black belt from Higan Machado, right?
Yes.
Do you still train in a gi at all?
Yes. Still teach gi classes. We have gi classes 3 days a week. I appointed one of my guys to teach, but I still teach and train in the gi.
Is that a part of combat submission wrestling? Is part of it gi, or is it tend to be no gi?
Well, the problem is I get a lot of jiu-jitsu guys will say, "Well, you guys, what belt are you?" So I go, "I don't know." So I started a belt ranking system. I included the belt ranking system from jiu-jitsu so guys would know where they're at. And then I appointed all the no-gi stuff. I said, okay, this is worth at least this level and this level. And if you guys want to get ranked faster, you're going to compete. And guys will say, well, CFW, you guys don't compete. Who are you guys? You guys say you're this. And I go, we don't say you're anything. And we will compete. So I started competing, and I've had team of guys, and they compete in all different divisions, and we usually do really well.
I heard that you had a student come in who had only studied your tapes and had a real, like, just a real strong grasp of the system itself. He'd just never taken classes or done any competitions or anything like that. I'm curious what your take is on Gracie University and the idea of studying via internet.
What I found by traveling is I see a lot of people studying over the internet. I believe that if you actually get on the mat and use your stuff, if you could use it. It is a type of university where if you just sit and watch it, there's controversy. Gerdan said Lacasa had a fight and he trained mentally for his fight while the other guy was doing all physical stuff. And then when they fought, the fight was even. And they said, well, how did you train? He said, I trained mentally. Well, I don't know if you could do that today, but that was stick fighting. But what I found is if you get a guy who does a lot of research and he's on the mat every day and is actually practicing the moves, and going through it and adding it to his game and rolling regularly, yeah, I believe definitely you can do stuff. The thing is, it's not about so much information. It's a lot about intricate details on maybe only a few things. And for competitors, it's not about the 100 moves. 5 times is about the 5 moves 100 times. And so you master those 5 moves. And that's what's important. For competition, you got to master a few things. I'm talking mastery.
Yeah, it's don't fear the man who knows 1,000 kicks. It's fear the man who's done 1 kick 1,000 times.
That's right. Because you know that that's his thing. It's like anyone you've ever seen, you know, will hit you with a Ippon Sanagi over and over. So,
all right. Yeah, I think I've taken up probably enough of your time at this point. I'm really grateful for you taking your time, especially amongst how busy your schedule has been and coming back into the United States. So if people want to come train with you, or if people want to get any of your videos, what do they need to do?
Just go on ericpaulson.com, and I have my information for my school. And my website has got school times, and it's also got a lot of stuff for videos. And affiliate information is up on the CSWcoach.com. And I get guys fighting and competing all the time. But, you know, more than anything, like I said, when you're in a dark room, you be the beacon of light. Wherever you go, be the beacon of light. Stay positive. People never want to hear the negative out of anybody. That's a downer. Always be the positive person wherever you go. Whatever you do, be positive with everything you do, and people will follow you.
I tell you what, in my interviews, I don't necessarily have very many takeaways, but I think that's probably about the best takeaway I've ever heard from a conversation I've had on the topic of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, or just about anything, is just be that beacon of light in someone's life, true. In something.
Everyone has something to offer somebody, and one of the biggest things is encouragement. You have to encourage everybody.
All right. Well, thanks again for your time, Eric Paulson. I really appreciate it. I'll throw a link up. If you guys are watching this through chokingminnesota.com, I'll put a link at the bottom where you can click to get in touch with Eric or see more about combat submission wrestling. And that's it. And until next week, I'll see you guys later. Thanks a lot, and I'll see you on the mats.